is the greatest love song that you have ever heard? Or what's your song? I almost was tempted to run around with a mic today and let there be like a karaoke competition to have people say, no, this song's better, this song's better. For the month of February, we're going to be walking through a song that is the greatest love song ever. It's actually known by the title, The Song of Songs, right? And it's found in your Bible wedged between Ecclesiastes and Isaiah. And it is this picture of love. It was written, it's a collection of poems and lyrics all put together, written for King Solomon, maybe even some by him. And it's supposed to be this picture of what love is, of the beauty of marital love, of sexual love, right? And the way God designed it to be. And it's the story we'll see of a man and a woman, and we see their voices going in and out, each one talking in turn, you know, seeing what they love about the other, how they desire the other. And interspersed, there's the friends of the woman saying things to encourage her. And we're going to go through this song and pull out pieces here and there, and from them try to extract advice that would help us understand what love really is, understand how to be truly attractive and who to be and what to be attracted to. We're going to look about how to pursue love. We're going to talk about how to enjoy God-honoring sex. And we're going to talk about how to deal with marital conflict and how to turn feelings of love into actions of love. And that's a lot of hows, right? We're going to be focusing a lot on how do we do this, but we also need the why, and here's the why. Because we live in a world where marriage seems cheap and trivial and sick and weak, where it is not the powerfully robust and verdant and full of life thing that God created it to be. Our pictures of marriage are broken and shattered, and in this room, every one of us is connected to someone, and maybe our own marriages that are broken and shattered, and our picture of marriage is people don't even want it anymore because it doesn't seem good. People in the church and people outside the church. We've lost the picture of marriage that God painted for us. And so we've lost all the beauty of it. We've forgotten that marriage should reflect who God is because God himself exists. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, he exists in this beautiful union, right? And that's what marriage could be in this world, a witness to the great love that God gives us. For those of you who are married, this song is going to help you grow your marriage. It's going to help you protect your marriage. It's going to help you protect from things that might sneak in and try to destroy it. And it's going to help heal from some of those things that are already hurting, right? But a lot of you are here and you're saying, but wait a minute, what if I'm not married? Because a lot of us here are not married. And there are probably two categories of people who are not married. There are those of you who are not married yet, but someday will be or hope to be. And for you, what this is going to do is establish a pattern, as we talk about today, attraction and what to look for, what to be attracted to, and how to be truly attractive. That's vital to understand, right? And also, how do you pursue a mate? And it's going to help you to understand what is God's picture of sex and purpose for sex, and how can I have sex be something that is beautiful and healthy and godly in my life, as opposed to just cheap thrills or just procreating. All those things are going to help you. And then there are those of you who are never going to marry or never going to marry again. Because some of you have been married and that marriage ended for one reason or another, or you're just never going to marry. And here's the deal. All these things we're talking about, one, they may provide healing for those of you who need that, but also all of these things are built on principles of relationship that will help each one of us in all of our relationships. So there's something for everyone in all of this. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to get a little hot and heavy sometimes, all right? Because the Song of Songs, how many of you have ever read the Song of Songs in the Bible? All right, so you know you were blushing when you read it, right? Like, what in the world is he saying? It gets a little hot and heavy. I'm talking like Barry White hot and heavy. Like, send your kids to your parents type hot and heavy. Because God created us to get hot and heavy. Sex is a gift from God. And if we could stop settling for cheap sex and start chasing the dream that this song is about, it'll change our lives. And I think then change our world a little bit too. Because the reason sex has become so cheap and so corrupted, I mean, God help us with the news stories that are coming out like every day about people just messed up, right? In our approach towards sex, and it leads us to do things that are abusive and hurtful. The reason it's so perverted is this disease we have called sin that causes us to misunderstand and misuse sex. And we abuse it because it doesn't satisfy us. And so we keep looking for new ways to be satisfied, and we're not. And so we end up twisting it and distorting it, just trying to squeeze every bit of satisfaction out of it that we can. And we reduce it to just having a good time. Or we reduce it to, oh no, it's scary, so it's only about having children. Listen, you will never discover what sex promises until you pursue it in a godly way. That's true if you're single, for sure. If you're entangled in sex outside of this covenant of marriage, then hear me, you're never going to understand and discover the deeper joy of sex or the purpose of sex there, outside of this covenant of between you and your spouse and God. You can't have godly sex anywhere other than within God's design. The same way you can't fly outside of the design of an airplane. Say you go and you step into an airplane that was designed by an engineer, and you can hurtle through the air at hundreds and hundreds of miles an hour, and you're wonderful as long as you're within the design of that airplane. But if you say, oh no, I want to get outside of this design of this airplane, it's cumbersome, and you step off that plane, guess what? You may feel all the thrills of flying, but you're not flying, you're falling. And the end of that is going to be a splat. Instead of flying off into some beautiful place that God has for you. That's true if you're single and you're pursuing sex outside of the covenant of marriage, but it's also true within marriage. Don't think that just because you get married, all the sex issues go away. By the way, can you believe we're here Sunday morning? I'm like 10 minutes into the message and we're talking about sex so much. Feel a little bit uncomfortable? But don't think that just because you're married, oh, all the sex issues go away. They do not. In fact, you can pursue sex in ungodly ways in marriage as well. And you can pursue sex as a way, selfishly. You can use it as a weapon. You can pursue it just for pleasure, or you can pursue it and make it only about procreation and lose all the gifts that God created sex to be between a husband and a wife. And so, the Song of Songs is going to be our guide, so let it inspire you, whether you're single or married, to appreciate God's beautiful picture of married love. So speaking of pictures, let's play a quick game. I'm going to show you a picture. I want you to find out what's wrong. Figure out what's wrong with this picture. Can you see what's wrong? That's right. That's not his arm. He put in a very muscular arm to post that somewhere for a dating profile, so that people could see, oh, and think, oh, he's strong. And then you show up and his arm's like as thick as my finger. And it's like, what happened to you? And look, you know, the internet is littered with pictures like that of people photoshopping themselves because we all want to be attractive, right? How many of you got up this morning and said, you know what? I'm going for ugly today. So we all want to be attractive. And some of us spend a lot of time working on ourselves to make ourselves attractive. Others of us would rather spend our time in Photoshop doing it that way. We spend all this energy and we create these bodies that would attract hummingbirds looking for something beautiful and sweet. But then we end up with these characters, with these personalities that attract dung beetles. You know what dung beetles are attracted to, right? Yeah, dung. Go look it up. You'll see. We are lured in our culture, in our world. We're lured in by appearances of beauty. And it's what I would call fatal attraction. We're lured by what appears to be so beautiful and lovely, and then we get there, we chase it, we sacrifice our time, our energy, we sacrifice our families, we sacrifice all these things to get the thing that looks so beautiful, and then we get there and realize it is dead on the inside. Because we're attracted to things that are fatally attractive. We're being attracted by the wrong things. And if you're not married, I want you to think about what kind of person should you be attracted to, and how can you be more attractive in ways that are not fatal, but actually faithful, so that the people you attract, when they actually arrive at you and begin to get inside and see who you are, they're not disappointed because you looked so attractive, but then you're sin-ridden and diseased on the inside. You're actually faithfully attractive. You are who you are, who God has made you through and through. And if you're married, how many of you know that if you're married, you still need to work on being attractive, right? This does not cut it right here. That ain't gonna work. You need to keep working on being attractive. Let's get rid of that quickly. That's just nasty. Look, if you're married, you still need to work on being attractive. Not just physically, though. Being an attractive person for your spouse. By being attractive in ways that are faithfully attractive, not fatally attractive. And then we're going to talk about, if you're not married and you're not going to be married, you still want to be an attractive person, right? You want to attract the right friends, right? You want to be attractive to them. So all of this will apply to us. And today we're going to talk about four qualities that we need for faithful attraction from the Song of Songs. So we're talking about faithful attraction, four attractive qualities to develop in your own life and also look for in others. Are you ready? We're going to go Song of Songs. So if you're in our app, you can follow along right there. If you're in the bulletin, the scripture's there, or you can follow along in your Bible. And this, it just jumps right in. Like verse one is just Solomon's Song of Songs. And then here we go. Verse two, this is the very beginning of the poem, and it starts right in. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Which is, by the way, Christina's verse for the year. I chose it for her. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the young women love you. Now, don't get all caught up on the kissy part. Focus on verse 3 there with me for a second, and we're going to pull out something that is vital to being truly attractive. Okay? And what that is godly character. Verse 3 says, pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes, but she's not talking about his Dracar Noir. Your name is like perfume poured out. Have you ever, you know, had someone walk by and you just, oh my goodness, they smell so good, right? Or you walk into like the mall and you're near a cookie shop and you smell all that. And it's like, you breathe it in and you don't want to ever leave there, right? You just want to sit there in that because it smells so good. And while you may not be able to literally smell bad character, do you know how when someone is behaving badly or someone you know, they just kind of have a bad character and they walk into the room, you ever see someone like their nose crinkles up? The same way it would when we smell something bad, or your people are talking and they mention someone who's got, you know, bad character and it just messes everybody up. They walk in a room and just if you mention their name, everybody's like, oh. Our nose crinkles up as though we're smelling something bad. Character puts off an aroma, right? And bad character puts off a foul aroma, and we can sense it. Good character, though, when the Bible talks about someone's name, they're talking about their character. And good character, it's almost like you can sense it. When that person walks in the room, you feel their character. You feel who they are, their reputation, and the way they impact the people around them. You may not be able to literally smell it, but you sense it somehow with senses that go beyond sight, sound, smell, and touch, and taste. And this guy here, the man in this poem, he has got a great name. He has got great character. When he walks in the room, his character is so solid, so healthy, so vibrant that everyone just kind of breathes it in. They're drawn to him. They're drawn to him. So let me ask you a question. What kind of people are drawn to you? What kind of people are drawn to you? If you're married, are you attracting within your marriage the wrong kinds of attention and reactions because your character smells funny? So yeah, your wife looks at you odd, but it's because your character smells a little funny and it's a little off. Or your husband's just not sure what to even say to you and it's because your character is off. What are you attracting within your marriage? By your character. And if you're single, what kind of friends are you attracting? All the people who want to gossip and complain? All the people who just want to be lazy and do nothing and not actually contribute to being productive? The people who want to steal? The people who want to cheat? The people who want to lie? The people who want to just go get drunk? The people who's attracted to you? What kind of people? What kind of friends? And ask yourself, well, if I'm attracting bad character, and if what they're attracted to is bad character, me, then I got to check my bait, right? Check what I'm winning people with. If you're not married yet, what kind of people are you attracting? You know, and if you find you're being attracted by women, if you find you're being attracted by guys who only want sex, then you got to say, check your bait. It's not your fault that guys can be that way. Women can be that way too. But check what's the bait I'm using? Am I dressing in a way that suggests this to people? Not that you have to for guys to act that way, but ask yourself, what's the bait I'm using with the friends I'm, where am I hanging out? Where am I going looking for guys? Is it the club? Who am I attracting? I'm attracting people there. Well, are those the people you want to be attracting? Check your bait. Andy Stanley said it, I think he said it great when he said, become the person you're looking for is looking for. Become the person you're looking for is looking for. If you want to have a healthy marriage and a healthy spouse who has godly character, who is loyal and honest and true and trustworthy and loving and all these things, if you want godly character from your potential spouse or from your current spouse or from your friends, then be what it is you want to have and attract in others. Become the person you're looking for is looking for. You know how you get that character? You don't get it online in a dating site. You don't get it by pursuing a spouse or pursuing friends. You get it by seeking God first. You get it by pursuing Jesus. You get a godly character not by putting something on, but by actually having Jesus fill you and change you. You get it by joining a small group and being around people who are going to talk and invest in you and help you build that character inside. You join the discipleship groups we run. And you say, I just want to have Jesus built inside of me. I want to have godly character. It doesn't come by, you know, buying it at a store or putting it on or writing it into a profile. It comes slowly over time with godly people around you, helping build that into you. That's how your character becomes this breath of fresh air, this godly character. And then you become truly attractive. So if you want to attract people who are godly, build godly character. And who should you be attracted to? People who show this godly character. That's what we want to build. My father, like all fathers, loves to tell stupid jokes and horrible jokes. So I'm going to share one with you of his jokes, and we'll see what you think. He'll be here next Sunday. They're moving up this week, so you can tell him whether this joke is good or bad. He used to tell me about this kid in his school who, I don't know how this works, but the kid was missing an eye, and he had a wooden eye that they made for him. They didn't have glass eyes back then. My dad's kind of old. So he had this wooden eye that the kid wore. And my dad was telling me about a time where this kid, who felt really insecure about his wooden eye, they tried to paint it and make it look real, but, you know, it's wood. So he felt really insecure, and they were at a school dance as kids, and this friend with the wooden eye is just standing in the shadows of the room, doesn't really want anyone to notice him or see him. He's kind of just on his own. And they're encouraging him, come on, you got to go ask somebody to dance. Somebody, you got to get somebody. And they notice there's this girl on the other side of the room who's also in the shadows. And this is a girl who had just a huge nose. And she was really self-conscious about it, really insecure about it. And so she kind of stayed off to the side. So my dad and his friends kept encouraging this kid with the wooden eye, please, just go ask her to dance, right? She needs someone to dance with. You go ask her. So they finally get him to go across the room up to this girl, and he just kind of looks at her and says, well, would you like to dance? And she's excited. She can't believe that someone's actually asked her to dance. So she says, would I? Would I? And he says, well, fine, big nose, big nose. And he leaves. It's my dad's joke. And the point is, we all walk around with our insecurities, right? We all walk around with our wooden eyes and our big noses, whatever they may be. All right? And those insecurities, they close us off and they make us want to avoid contact. We react out of those insecurities, and nobody understands why and we're reacting the way we are, but it's because we're feeling this insecurity that others may not even notice and see, right? And these insecurities can plague us. And the woman in this poem, she's got an insecurity. Look at verse 6. She says to her friends, she's saying, don't stare at me because I am dark. I am darkened by the sun. My mother's sons were angry with me and made me take care of the vineyards. My own vineyard I had to neglect. So she's basically really, really tanned. I had an economics teacher in high school named Mr. Drew, who was white almost like me. And every spring break, he would go down to Florida, and he would come back, and he would look like a brown leather jacket. I was amazing the transformation this guy would go through in just a week in the sun. And he would just like have baby oil on. And he would come back and he would look like a dried up leather jacket. It wasn't really attractive what the sun did to his skin. And this woman is not saying she's unattractive because she has dark skin, because she says in verse 5, dark am I yet lovely. She's still beautiful, but she's saying that she's tan. She's really, really tan. And she's living in a culture where being really, really tan was not considered attractive for women. It demonstrated that she was out there working in the fields, right? And so all the other women who are more well cared for, they don't have these suntans. They haven't been weathered by the sun. And she's like, I'm weathered by the sun. This isn't the way, you know, women are supposed to look today. And so she's saying, you know, please don't look at me. And she says, I've had to neglect my own vineyard, which is where throughout this song, you'll see when they talk about their vineyard, they're talking about their own bodies. And she feels insecure. So what's she going to do? Because you can't build a relationship on, oh, don't look at me, right? You can't build a relationship on hiding your insecurities. That does not work. So she's got to do something to step outside of that. The walls we put up to protect our insecurities, they break down, they ruin relationships. But throughout the song, as you read it, and I encourage you, go home and read it today. And you'll see how she, even though she feels insecure, she opens up. She allows herself to be seen. She wants him to see her and know her. And she doesn't hide. She opens up and is vulnerable. Because if you're looking to be attractive, or if you're looking for what's a quality to look for that's attractive, faithfully attractive, it's openness. It's vulnerability. Some of you think your walls make you stronger, more manly, or more whatever, more womanly. But they don't. They just make it harder to have relationship. They're not attractive. They just show that you're not willing to reveal yourself. If you want to be truly attractive, then it takes openness. Openness. When you get close to someone, especially in marriage, you cannot help. There's things you're going to learn. There's insecurities you're going to see. First thing you start to notice is all the physical insecurities. I've talked to more than one married couple who on their wedding night, who told me, you know, all the build up to your wedding night, right? You've been faithful and you've held out and it's your wedding night. I've had more than one couple tell me how on their wedding night, they just kind of sat there and looked and giggled. Because it was just such a vulnerable moment. And it's not like a movie at all. It's like silly and weird and uncomfortable at first. So those physical things are the first thing that insecurities we deal with. And you just, well, here I am, all right? But then you start to learn about each other and you begin to discover emotional insecurities and intellectual insecurities and relational insecurities, things that have happened in our lives that have caused us to be insecure. And as we learn about each other's insecurities, that openness is like a magnet. It attracts you and binds you closer. That's why when you violate a marriage, it hurts so stinking bad. Because you've opened up to each other in ways that never open up with anybody else. All of your insecurities, and it has formed a bond, and to tear that apart is to tear each other apart. It's to tear your own hearts apart. What's unattractive, what should repel you if you're looking for a mate or a spouse, boyfriend or girlfriend, is someone who doesn't share their insecurities, or someone who treats your insecurities carelessly, or someone who gives you new insecurities. You definitely don't want that either. And that's something people do today. They try and, in order to have control in a relationship, they'll try and make the other person, whether it's a friend or a girlfriend or a spouse, feel insecure. And we may not even always know we're doing it. But a relationship that's faithfully attractive is based on an openness, sharing our insecurities and protecting them, right? If you share your insecurity with someone and they turn around and use it against you, that's a bad friend, that's a bad boyfriend, bad girlfriend, that's a bad relationship. Move away from it. Address it. If it can get fixed, fix it, or move away. If you find that happening in your marriage, then it's time to sit down and have a talk. Maybe it's time to just go see a counselor and help you talk through it and figure out, let's not treat each other this way. Let's not treat each other in ways where we take advantage of our insecurities, but actually where we encourage an openness with each other's insecurities. Openness is attractive to the kind of person you want to attract. Being the kind of person who doesn't abuse another's insecurities is what it takes to be faithfully attractive. The song goes on. Verse 7. Tell me, you whom I love, where you graze your flock. So this is her talking to him. Tell me, you whom I love, where do you graze your flock and where you rest your sheep at midday? Because she wants to go and see him. She wants to go hang out with him, be near him. And then she says, why should I be like a veiled woman beside the flocks of your friends? So look, she wants to be with him. She's trying to find a way to hang out with him and just be present with him. And this song is not pretending that she does not have desire, right? Desire is real. You'll see it more and more as we go through. But she also has standards. She has a desire to be with him and be near him, but she also has standards. And so when she says, "Why should I be like the veiled woman beside the flock of your friends?" It's very possible and likely she's talking about prostitutes who didn't necessarily have street corners in the kind of pastoral society that they had. They would hang out around the shepherd's tents and be available to the guys. Or maybe it may not even be prostitutes. It could be just girls hanging out by the flocks trying to entice the men, and they're wearing these veils so no one sees, and it's all flirting, and it's all trying to lure them with sex, right? Because back in those days, those who have sheep have money. That's currency, right? And so that whole game of trying to lure them, whether it's prostitutes or whatever, she's like, "I am not playing that game. I have high standards. So I'm not going to be walking around like a veiled woman trying to, you know, figure out and get you to find me and be attracted to me." In several other parts of the song, she turns to her girlfriends. In Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 7, she turns to them and says to them, which is like she's talking directly to us, she says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires, until it is fully grown." This is her way of saying, don't rush into sexual expressions of love. Let that grow up in the right time out of covenant love. Sex is part of attraction, but if you wake it up early, it's ugly and cranky and irritable, like most of you are when you get woken up early. If you rush into it before love is fully grown, you kill it. You kill it. Love isn't fully grown until you've given each other your lives in a covenant before God. Love isn't fully grown until you've given each other your lives. Look, if you're a dating couple, it should be difficult to keep your hands off each other, right? Of course. God designed us that way. If that's not a problem, then there is a problem. But you do it anyway. You keep your hands off each other anyway. You don't go grabbing at love until it's fully grown, and it's not fully grown until you've given your lives to each other. Look, Christina and I had a hard time keeping our hands off each other while we were dating. She more than me. But we did, right? We did. We set up guardrails. We set up boundaries. Our parents helped us set up boundaries. Parents, help your kids set up boundaries, right? So that they understand, don't go grabbing at this thing early before it's fully grown. And it's not fully grown until it's in a commitment, a lifelong commitment of love. And so we set up all those things to protect ourselves because we love God. We love God most. And if I love God and if I loved her, I wasn't going to take from her anything until after I'd given her my whole self. That is love. That's what love does, right? And I know we don't all have that same story, right? Some of us climbed into our marriage beds with a bunch of baggage. The awesome news is that God can heal all of that. God can restore and heal and make you completely new and forgive and all that stuff. God can wipe you clean and heal your heart and your mind and give you an incredible love. But if you're dating, then you've got a choice to make. And you can't wait until you're in the middle of being tempted or the middle of a makeout session to decide, oh, wait a minute, are we going to, or no, do we really want to be faithful to God? Or, oh, I can't help it, this is just taking over me, right? You can't decide there. You got to decide ahead of time. Either you're going to honor God together or you're going to sin together. Either you're going to honor God together or you're going to choose to just reject God and his plan, and you're going to grab early at this thing because that thing has become God to you. Is really what it is. That thing has become God to you, and you're going to dishonor God. Choose, we said this a few weeks ago, choose what you want most over what you want now, right? Choose what you want most. And I want God. I want a godly marriage. I want to truly love my spouse. And so I choose what I want most over what I want now. And look, if you're married, maybe there are some things in your life that are not at a high standard, and they're impacting your marriage. Maybe you're not keeping high standards about your relationships with members of the opposite sex. Maybe you're not keeping a high standard about things you look at and watch. Maybe you're not keeping a high standard about flirting. Maybe you're not keeping a high standard about the way you talk to your spouse. High standards are what will keep you continually attractive to and attracted by each other. Right? It's what's going to keep your friendships healthy and pure. godly character, openness, high standards. These are the ways to be truly attractive. And these are the qualities that should attract you. And now the fourth one connects back to the second one. Remember, the second one, she was feeling insecure about her body a bit and how she looked. And she's like, oh, don't look at me. So now this fourth one, we're going to look at what he says to her about her body. So look at it. It's chapter 1 of Song of Songs, verse 9. He says, I liken you, my darling, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariot horses. You are like a horse. There you go, guys. That's your Valentine's card for next week. Write that in your card and see the sparks fly. But if we look closely, we'll learn this fourth thing, because what he's doing is he's actually encouraging her. And that is this fourth characteristic of faithful attraction. It is consistent encouragement. And he is encouraging. Let me explain why being called a war horse is encouraging. First of all, he calls her a mare, which is a female horse, in heat. Usually stallions are what they used for war. Stallions are what they used to pull chariots. And stallions are the big male horses that are not castrated. They're kept intact so that they would maintain their aggressiveness, right? And he calls her a mare among Pharaoh's chariot horses, all those stallions. So he's saying something really interesting here that most of us wouldn't get unless we dug a little bit. There was a military tactic that was used in some battles in ancient times. In particular, there was one battle where the Egyptians were attacking Kadesh, and with their chariots and all their stallions, their intact male stallions rushing in their chariots, and what the people in Kadesh did is they took a mare in heat and they sent her out into the battlefield. Can you guess what all those male stallions did? The same thing all the construction guys do when you walk by. They just, like, the horses stop what they're doing. They just go crazy. They all start chasing her. They're not listening to their charioteers. They're not doing anything they're told to do. They just, all they care about is, wow, this female is the most attractive thing in the world. We don't care about anything else. That's what happened. And that definitely happened in that war. It might have happened in some others, too. So when he compares her to a mare among the chariot horses, he's saying, you drive me crazy. You are so beautiful and attractive. It drives me to distraction. Like, what do you mean, don't look at you? I can't take my eyes off of you, he's saying. What do you mean your skin has had too much sun? You are amazingly beautiful. What do you mean some guy made you feel insecure about your body because of the way he talked to you or treated you? What do you mean you're insecure because you have a wooden eye? What do you mean about these insecurities? And he just pours out encouragement on her. Encouragement is attractive. And as you read through this Song of Psalms, it's like blushingly encouraging the things they say to each other. Become the kind of person who you train yourself so that it becomes part of your nature to encourage your spouse, encourage the people around you in your friendships. See how that changes your friendships. Encourage the person you're engaged to, encourage the person you're dating. Be a person through whom encouragement is just constant and it just oozes out. And you can plan for encouragement, guys. Some of us, you know, we think it has to be spontaneous, right? And you just say it right away. You know what? Thought out encouragement. I don't think I've ever felt more special than in times where someone's come to me and says, you know, I've been thinking about this and this, and I just want to tell you, you know, I love this about you and this and this and this. Like, they've thought about some things. And they've taken time to think about that and then come tell me. Like, wow, how would that make you feel? What if you did that for somebody else? How would that make them feel? Encouragement. And listen, an encourager, pay attention here, an encourager is not someone who pretends you have no faults. An encourager is someone who refuses to pretend you are your faults. All right? They refuse to pretend that your faults are the end of you. That's an encourager. Not someone who's blind and says, oh no, you look fine in that dress when really you look horrible. Oh no, honey, you're not gaining weight when really they're like 40 pounds overweight. No, an encourager is someone who recognizes the things that may be wrong about you and me, but that doesn't let them make that our definition, right? They don't treat us like that's what defines us. They encourage the best out of us. Go home, read through this song. You'll blush at the content. They start to say things like verse 15. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful your eyes are doves. And then she says back to him, how handsome you are, my beloved. Oh, how charming our bed is verdant. One of the things we teach young couples when we go through premarital counseling is to practice daily compliments with each other. So have you ever done that? Just practice daily compliments? If you are married, there's your homework for the week, all right? Go and practice daily compliments with each other, all right? And come up with real stuff. So, you know, they shouldn't all be body parts, right? Let's come up with real compliments for each other about the things we like about each other and love about each other. And do that this week and see if it doesn't start to have an impact on your marriage, right? Do that if you're dating. Look for compliments and just let it encourage them to come out. Do that with your friendships, right? Do that with your friendships and see if that doesn't begin to change the atmosphere of your friendships. Do that at work, right? Doesn't mean ignoring things that are wrong. It means encouraging people to go past the things that are wrong, right? If you want to have a healthy marriage, we train on these qualities together, these faithful attraction qualities together. If you're trying to find a potential spouse, or you're dating, or you're single and hope to one day attract a spouse, then you train in these faithful, attractive qualities. And if you're single and you just want to have good friendships, then train in these qualities: godly character, openness, high standards, and consistent encouragement. That is what will make you attractive, and that's what you ought to be attracted to in others. Don't be attracted by the fatal attraction stuff. Be attracted by faithful attraction. Worship team, would you come back? And today we're going to celebrate Jesus and what he did for us. And I mean, Jesus is the best picture of faithful attraction, isn't he? Because these are the qualities Jesus had: godly character. He himself is God. And yet, he emptied himself of all of his rights. He didn't take advantage of his rights. He became like you and me, flesh and blood like you and me. He allowed himself to be insulted, allowed himself to be abused, allowed himself to be rejected. And through it all, he never sinned. He was tempted the same way you and I are, but he, God himself, godly character. Jesus was also open. He wasn't this aloof person who kind of stood there off to the side looking holy. No, he told his disciples the night he was about to be killed, he said, "My heart is in anguish, guys. I'm dying here. I know what's about to happen, and it's tearing me up inside. I really don't want to do it, but I need to do it because I love you." And he opened up about that. He shared. He shared. He was open. That's the God we serve. He opens up to us that way. He opened himself to us. High standards? Come on, Jesus, you're God. You don't have to suffer. Let's do something cool with being God. Why don't you like jump off this building and then fly? Jesus said, "No, I have a standard, and my standard is I'm here to love people and die for them. So, no, I'm not here to take advantage of being God. I could do it. Yeah, I could make bricks into bread. Yeah, I could drill those holes and boom, half a second. But that's not what I'm here for. My standard is I'm here to give my life and die for these people I love. And I'm not going to make this about me." Yeah, Jesus had high standards. And yeah, Jesus is constantly encouraging. He said, "I am with you always. To the very end of the age, I am with you. You are my brothers and sisters. I have chosen you." All these are things Jesus has said. Go read God's word and see it. Now, he is here to love you and forgive you. He is constantly with us, encouraging us and lifting us up by his Spirit. And I'm praying this morning. This is my prayer walking into here this morning. This is my prayer for you as we get close to leaving this morning. I pray that you will begin to be attracted to Jesus. Or for some of you, attracted to Jesus again. Or more attracted than you've ever been before. Attracted to Jesus, who models this faithful attraction to us. That you'd stop being lured, that I would stop being lured by fatal attractions that seem so enticing and full of pleasure, but are really just full of death and nothingness. I'm praying that you and I won't give in to sin because it wants to dull our senses and keep us from appreciating the beauty and the fragrance of Jesus. It's like our world is like those cosmetic counters. They're just psh, 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 spraying all that horrible perfume on our faces, and it makes it so we can't really smell anything anymore. And we don't smell the beauty of Jesus and his love. I'm praying this morning you'll be attracted to Jesus. Attracted to Jesus. and then you'll become attractive like he is. Jesus says, look, I am your tower. Put down your defenses and your insecurities. He says, look, no one has ever loved you the way I love you. No one has ever sacrificed for you the way Jesus sacrificed for you. So this morning, before we celebrate this love, I want us to sing this song about his love. No one has ever loved you the way Jesus loves you. Let's worship him.